two talks this afternoon. Now we have Amy McGowan from the Independent Workers Union talking about building a fighting union.
That's right.
That's right. And then Amy's going to talk for about 20 minutes, and then we'll open it up to questions and answers for maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, and we'll take a break. And at 5 o'clock, we have Kevin Doyle speaking about the Irish Melee historical speech. So again, it'll be about 20 minutes, and another questions and answers. So, without further ado, I'll see you then.
Okay, well, first off, happy May Day to everybody. Emma Gowan, Independent Workers Union, I'm an executive. We'll be 10 years old next year, and we're constantly expecting cards and flowers and crazy champagne. So, the office will be open for such next year. I would amend the title to not building a fighting trade union, but to building a new fighting trade union, because there have been other fighting trade unions in this country, and we're talking going back to 1916 on. Unfortunately, as we're all aware, the trade union movement in this country has disgraced itself on numerous occasions, and nothing more so than within the last 3 to 4 years with the economic collapse of this country. And it is really quite shameful to see a May Day march today. Once again, there's only one trade union banner in it. That says an awful lot for the state of organization in this country. I'm going to come back to this topic in a moment, but first I want to talk about two pieces of action which have taken place. One micro, one macro, and one action took place about 25, 30 years ago, and the other one took place last week. About 25 to 30 years ago, those of you who are of a certain age might remember a character called Lucan, Lucky Lord Lucan. You all heard of him?
Yes.
Okay. Lucan was one of these playboy lords in London, living the high life, mainly because he was taking ground rents from properties that he and his family owned, both in the centre of London and in other parts of Britain as well. Lucan's wife was murdered, and his nanny was beaten up or something, or whatever. And the upshot for all anyway was that Lucan disappeared. He was wanted by the police for questioning vis-a-vis his wife's murder, and there was a big hoo-ha as to where the hell Lucan had got to. The estate, Lucan's estate, his family, became not only quite concerned because Lucan disappeared, but they were beginning to have serious doubts as to what was going to happen if Lucan actually turned up dead. What was going to happen to the estate? Now, this is direct relevance to this country, because the town of Lucan in Dublin, there was massive ground rents, and we are talking serious money, was being paid every single year to Lord Lucan. So there was a committee got up in Lucan in Dublin, and the first thing they did was that they hired a barrister to look into the legal situation, but also because the campaign that they were about to organise would have had some problems for elderly people, some of them were paying ground rents and so on. So they took a decision that they would pay the ground rents, but instead of paying it over to somebody who could quite possibly be dead, that they would pay it into escrow, into an account, until the whole matter of Lucan's viability as a legal entity had been sorted out, and then they would decide whether to pay it over or not. Now, what's interesting was the response both from the Irish government and the British government, because the Irish government had the jitters all together. That was the last thing they wanted, because the Irish government at the time was in negotiations with the British government as to how they would formally end this ground rent business. And that's where the trouble really started. There was all sorts of legal action taken against the tenants to pay up, but to their credit, they held firm, kept the money in escrow, and when Lucan was eventually declared deceased with nobody by the British government, the Irish government had finally got its act together and could buy out a ground rent, and this was eventually done, which led to some massive dividends. The reason why I raise this issue now is because it shows what ordinary people can do if they stand together, bond together on a particular issue. Now, this is only an issue about ground rent, but we're talking about paying the debt, and it has direct relevance to the next issue I'm going to bring. something that happened last week. Last week, the German government paid the last instalment on the reparations money that was agreed in 1919 that they would pay the Versailles Conference. Now think about that. The last instalment of money that they owed from 1919. How did this happen? Think of history. 1919, Germany was defeated. Well, it wasn't defeated militarily, but there was an armistice. The German army felt betrayed by the civilian government, which led directly to this animosity between the army and the civilian government apparatus in Germany down the line. The economy collapsed because of the reparations that they had to pay, and I mean completely collapsed. We all know the stories of people going into banks with wheelbarrows full of money that they were just being absolutely worthless. It led directly to the rise of Hitler. But what happened after Hitler and the German war machine were defeated? What happened in 1945, 46 and 47? There was a complete reversal. Instead of Germany being punished monetarily, Germany was helped out. And it begs the question, why? The IMF can turn around and help you when they want to, and they can kick you in the balls when they want to as well. And to put it bluntly, that is precisely what is happening in this country right now. The IMF is quite prepared to see Ireland collapse, completely collapse, as long as they can privatise everything, pull everything out of the country to their benefit. But there is one part of this message that we have to get across to people. We might be in trouble. We are in trouble. Serious trouble. But so is Europe. Germany is this close to economic collapse. Now, if anybody had said 5 years ago that Germany is the fourth largest economy on the planet, would be close to economic collapse, people would laugh at you. They need to laugh at you now. But that is the reality of it. This country is going to default. There is no doubt about it. There is no way we can pay back the money that we supposedly owe them. And if we attempt to do so, then all you're going to do is drive this country literally underground completely. So you have two choices here. You repudiate the debt completely, and you say, we're not paying the debt from the bankers, we're not going to pay that, no matter what pain it causes us. And as for the sovereign debt that the state owes, yeah, we want that deferred for X amount of years. After all, like I said, Germany paid the last one for the first World War last week. And if you say we're going to pay it back in 90 years, that's the sovereign debt I'm talking about now. Germany, I have no doubt about it, France and Germany would go for it. They'd have to go for it, because if they don't, this economy, their economy, is going to collapse down on top of all, and that's the end of it. That's the end of the euro experiment. Personally, I'd be fucking delighted if that happens. And they know it. The German banks know it. They're on the hook for billions to Irish banks. How do we build a new fighting for the German? Obviously, you've got to grab membership. You've got to have leadership in the organisation. You've got to have a clearly defined ideology, and you've got to have credible alternative economic strategies. These are the four main points. Leadership. What do we have in the trade union movement here at the moment? We have a mixed bag of public service and private sector trade unions. The public sector unions, unfortunately, have been in partnership for the last 25, 30 years almost. And what have they done? They no longer have credibility, even with their own workforce. That's one major problem. And although they are not losing membership as rapidly as the private sector, the amount of dissatisfied members within those unions is growing all the time. But unfortunately, there is no change in the leadership within those unions. And if anybody took the trouble to listen to any of the comments at the teacher conferences over the last week or so, they've made it perfectly clear they are not going to confront the government, they are not going to hold any unjust election, and they are not going to change their social democratic ideology. So in my opinion, and in the opinion of the Independent Workers Union, you can write them off. It ain't going to happen. Not with the public service, trade unions. Now we come to the private sector. If you look at the percentage-wise, how many private sector employees are actually in trade unions? Well, 27%. It's very, probably even lower. It's probably, it's very, very, very poor. And of those, organisation is very, very, very sparse. Mainly because the trade unions themselves don't have an organisational structure in place in the workplaces. That's one of the main reasons. We see it every day inside in the office. People have a problem, and it's usually ending up either before a wage commissioner, or the Employment Appeals Tribunal, or the Labour Court. I can tell you straight up now, 60% of those problems could be resolved on the factory floor if you had a credible organisational structure within the workforce there, but you don't. That's the first thing, organisation. Membership. I would ask everybody here who's in a public service trade union, if they are in one, yeah, to join the Independent Workers Union and join the trade union as prepared to fight the audit and lay down and acquiesce to the policies of right-wing government. That would be the second thing. The third thing I would raise would be ideology. What's the ideology of the main trade unions at the moment? They have a social democratic outlook, they have a social democratic ideology, and they're only waiting once to enter into partnership with the government at the moment. They've made this perfectly clear. They have no intention of actually standing up and fighting. It's not going to happen. So if there is anybody here who's of the opinion that you can build a resistance and an alternative with the trade union movement as it is within those trade unions, and I think you're very, very sadly mistaken. You have to see it today in the May Day March. And the third thing I would say is that a credible alternative economic strategy. I'm not going to bore everybody with that. We've seen bits and pieces of it come out from the trade union website and all the rest of it. But if we don't have a credible alternative economic strategy to put out there as an alternative, then we don't have the right to stand up and say this should be the new society that we envisage and that this country needs. Okay, I'm going to leave it at that. Anybody want to questions and answers?
Eamon, one point I'd like to bring up is the idea of at the moment we have professional officers in the most of the trade unions, whereas there was a time when they were voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember there were disputes from time to time when the regional hospital was being built. I remember Owen Will was a working electrician down in Ford at the time, and if we had this dispute and we'd phone up Owen Will would clock out, come out to the regional, try and sort out the problem. Then he'd go back to Ford, clock in again, and if he lost 2 or 3 hours here, the union would pay him that. But we have men now, and in the unions, and they're getting big salaries. The salaries are commensurate with managers that are working for the bosses, you know. And there seems to be this sort of an idea that if there's so many 100,000 men in the union, that you should get that they should get paid something commensurate with maybe a part of the ESP or something like that. I can't understand the logic of that at all, and I think that is a big part of the problem. I think one thing that I thought was a great thing to happen, a great sign of international solidarity, was when the postman went on strike there some years ago, and I think the strike went on for a long time, and they ran out of funds, and they got financial support from post workers union in Japan, and the strike eventually was successful, and it wouldn't have been successful only for the financial support of the union in Japan. That was a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that a fighting, unions need a fighting fund as well, you know, in conform industrial action, because industrial action can go on and on.
Well, okay, you've raised 2 points. I mean, I don't want to come across as just sort of union or mainstream union bashing just for the sake of it. But there are some very, very important points to be raised here. Why have the mainstream trade unions ended up in the mess that they're in? Well, there's a variety of reasons. Well, one of the main reasons is their ideology. If their ideology is the same as the bosses, and if their ideology is the same as the government that they're dealing with, then you're not going to get very far with that. That's one problem. In terms of mechanics and organisation, an awful lot of the mainstream trade unions adopted a policy quite some time ago of downgrading any power or initiative from local shop stewards and to employing university graduates in actually getting trade unions themselves, because they realised that they were going to need people with university degrees for various aspects of research within the trade unions and so on and so forth. But that has backfired on them big time, because an awful lot of people working in trade unions now are not actually trade union people at all. They're careerists. They don't have an ideology to use, or an ideology that they believe in. To them it's just a job. So I move on to something else. Something in management. We see it ourselves all the time. So what do you do? To my mind, in organisations like that, they just cannot be changed. What's the question? So I think you have to build a new one. It's as simple as that. I think trying to do it from the inside is we're also corrupted $3 million, like, for what? So it's a hiring management could go off on trips all over the place, which is meant for training courses for others down the line, but that didn't happen. There's others then who are renting out their offices for this, that and the other. It's a talky company.
Take James
Moran.
Yeah, I think outlining the issue as well there that the trade union movement faces. I remember a number of years back involved in a group called TUAP, which was Trade Unions Non-Employed Against the Programme, so the first programme for national recovery, the first partnership deal. And I remember going into that, I had no background in trade union action, but we were very optimistic as an unemployed student at the time. And we were very optimistic that we could influence the vast trade union movement to vote no to the first partnership deal. Very naive in hindsight, but those campaigns got smaller and smaller as partnership agreements going on, and the levels of activity in the trade union which went down over time. I think it's good to say that the current trade unions are heavily dominated by the full time kind of paid professional bureaucrats who are paid along the line of bank managers, but that, to be honest. And that the internal life of the union in terms of membership participation has really dropped away substantially. Interestingly enough, there was an article in the Irish Times saying exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And people even on the right of the unions, the kind of social democratic right wing of the unions, admitting that there was a huge problem with getting people to come to branch meetings, and with people having to double up on officerships in these branches. These are unions that are reasonably active, but the teaching unions have a reasonable kind of activity. And even they were having trouble motivating people. And the solutions your man was talking about was that they needed to be more realistic than their demands. You know, internal complete force of the government was going, Jesus Christ, why did he know I was coming to the meetings? Why didn't he know I was actually not? So I agree with Eamon to a certain extent in terms of really the big focus has to be on building the IWU. I'm disinclined to completely dismiss people or the other unions. Not so much because they're saved, but because there's lots of people in them still, you know. And I need to reach out to them in a way, and I think it's possible to kind of do a kind of dual strategy, if you like. As a political activist, my choice to join the IWU, I was in SIPTU for 5 years. I never received any correspondence my entire time. I was never invited a single meeting. I never received a letter asking them. I just had to go in physically and hand the money over to the punks inside the place to let them know I was a member of the union. I don't know where they know I left. As a matter of fact, hate you're off. I don't know if the money ever went to the where it goes flush from, but who knows if that happened. But the point I was going to make is that it's about, like Eamon says, rebuilding fighting unions, but building them on the proper basis this time. And with a character that's extremely democratic and that participatory for the membership. And when people know that what's decided in the union gets implemented in the union, that they're part of making decisions and being part of implementing them. And shifting the ideas of JU movement away from just being completely defensive to being organizations that don't fight for our interests in the class as well. And I think the IW gives me a lot of hope in that sense because it is a big break with what's gone before. And at a time when really people could just completely despair of being organized unions at all. It's very hard for younger people to join unions because of what's gone on for the last while. But the point you made earlier, that the statistic was very interesting, that the private sector was talking about 20% unionization at the 80s around that. Right? That's probably gone down a bit now with the recession as well on top of that. And that shows that 80% of the workers are unorganized in the private sector. That's a huge amount of people that are getting fucked over regularly, like, and that they're an exceptional employment. And, really, sooner or later, those people will be organized in unions. And sooner or later, they'll join unions or self-interest anyway. It's just making sure that the right type of unions, right type of ideas are longer. And in a way, that's probably the constituency that we're targeting the most when we're building the union in the short and medium kind of term. But I think it is still part of you making arguments with people in the unions. There's not a good activist in there who's still fighting their corner. You know, you saw it at the teachers' conferences in groups in the unions. They could be good people to go in there and work with, because both for their ideas and experience, but also at some point those unions will have, their leadership will have to be challenged, their structure will have to be challenged, whether they're our internal democratic revolutions like in Egypt or something, we'll see. But I think the fighting on two fronts, if you know what I mean. Obviously the priority for members of the IW is making the IW a bloody good example of a fighting union. So there's a good shining example to every worker in the country, every trade unionist in the country, that this is how you do it and this is how you do it effectively.